Welcome to Caffeinated Monsters. I'm your host, Faith. Today, we've got Keith from MK Horror with us.
Hello again, Faith. Nice to speak to you and talk about a really interesting genre. Different reasons.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about possession horror, and Jesus Christ, there's a lot of them.
There really is. It's a genre that's been copied over and over again. For me, I mean, and a lot of listeners may not agree with me, there's like a handful of really good possession horror. Like, we're talking some of the best horror films of all time of possession horror. They've been copied so often, they've never lived up to the quality of the top films.
Yeah, a lot of the, in terms of, specifically like exorcism films when it comes to possession, it's they definitely take a lot from the OG, The Exorcist.
Yeah, of course.
The Big Daddy.
Yeah, that's the problem, right? It's like, The Exorcist is obviously one of the, for me, it's one of the greatest horror films of all time. I love that film so much. We screened it with MK Horror at the gallery. And it's one of the greatest, like, times I've had at the cinema. To see that last half hour on the big screen was just so wonderful. It's so well shot. It's so, like, it's a slow start. But when it kicks off, that film really kicks off. And it just, in a film, and obviously, it gets copied down the years, like slashes get copied down the years. But I don't know if I can, like, count on two fingers, maybe three fingers, like, films that are really good around exorcism. Most of them, it's just a formulaic thing where you've got, I guess, you know, the film just always builds up to the exorcism at the end. And you know, it doesn't work. I went to see, what's the new one, Pray for the Devil. And, you know, they did a nice different twist on it, but eventually, when the film's finished, you're like, yeah, that was alright. It wasn't a great film, because every exorcism film does lead up to the exorcism, just copying what the exorcist did. And, you know, it's very rare that they're any good. I guess for me, Exorcist and incredible Exorcist 3, you know, the leaders for me in exorcism films.
I mean, I really like the Exorcist. I've got like a giant list of films. I put them in three different categories of watched, want to watch, and to mention. And there's quite a few of them. And it's like, but it's, I looked online, and the amount of possession horror films that begin with the exorcism of
Emily Rose, the exorcism of, yeah. There's lots of them.
Yeah, Exorcism, Emily Rose, Hannah Grace.
Yeah, The Last Exorcist.
What an excellent day for an exorcism. It would bring us together.
To me, it's like, obviously, The Exorcist is like one of the most famous horror films of all time, one of the most wonderful horror films of all time. Obviously, that then leads into people doing, sort of copying it, you know, like the slasher genre does. But, like, I think with the slasher genre, say, for instance, you could get, like, a Halloween, Michael Myers, you know, maybe that's the first slasher film you ever watched. Then you go, okay, then we've got Freddy Krueger, then we've got Jason Voorhees, but they're all different. But when you do an exorcism film, you're doing the same thing every time. You're trying to build up a story that's evolved around someone getting possessed, and then an exercise at the end of it. It's not easy to do, because it is literally one sort of linear way to tell a story.
I've seen a few possession films that do differ from The Exorcist, and they're kind of like The Exorcist and like exorcism films are like their own subgenre on their own.
Yeah,
but I did see that there's most possession films are predominantly based on religious situations, and it's just kind of like, I wish they'd make more where it's like not just about like testing someone's faith, or whether to like, there's like a biblical demon that's trying to like take over someone that's innocent, and it's like, oh god, I'm just done with it. And it's like, I've managed to find some that don't have that kind of formula to them, and it's like, oh thank god there's some, but I wish there was more.
The thing is, as you say, it just I repeat this again, but it's like a linear story. Someone turns up, finds a relic, gets possessed, leads on for the film. They do some bad stuff, then priest or whoever comes in and exorcises them, and maybe there's a twist where the demon still goes into somebody else, I guess. But like, it's just such a formulaic thing, and it will never ever be bettered by The Exorcist. You know, The Exorcist is, for me, it's one of my top five horror films, I guess. I just love film so much, and you know, for its age as well, how brutal that film is when you know we're watching it on the big screen. When we screened it, it was just so wonderful. It was just so wonderful to watch the acting in there and how well it was shot and how nasty it was. And that was 1973, I think. I might be wrong in that, but it was 1973. Actually, a good like what always makes me smile about The Exorcist, it was released on Boxing Day 1973, if that's the right year. I do apologise if not, but released on Boxing Day, like the celebration of Jesus and Christianity, they released The Exorcist during that period.
Oh wow, yeah, I actually didn't know that, but that, somehow that sounds fitting for it.
You think back in that early 70s, this is before obviously Halloween started changing the game in terms of horror. Yeah, probably just coming out of the Hammer era, which then was like, you know, it was great. I love Hammer films, but they're not really horrific. Not, you know, there was no nastiness in that. It's you know, it's just someone being very camp vampire or brilliant films, but you know, not a nasty film. And The Exorcist came out, and you know, that film was really, really shocking at that point in time. You know, it's great to read about it, how like obviously Linda Blair played Reagan, and it was Eileen Dietz who plays the face of Pazuzu. You know, you get the flashes up the screen, and every now and again during the film when you're watching it, that flash of her face, the demon's face comes up. It's so well done for this time. And like, I believe that Eileen Dietz played actually Reagan as well during the more problematic scenes, you know, the obviously crucifix, the endless way, but fuck me, Jesus scream, scene. Yeah, fuck me.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah, that would make sense.
You don't want like a young child, you know, shoving a crucifix inside her. But like, I think she played because she was she's quite a diminutive person anyway. She's quite small. I met her. The last horror con I went to, it's really lovely, but like, yeah, she's really small. You can see how that would have worked for her to play body double of Reagan, because she is quite tiny.
You would tower over her.
Yeah, she was fun. She was really nice. Terrible signature though. I got my ex's poster signed by her, and she might as well just like written out Eileen Dietz in capitals.
But to be fair, my handwriting is absolutely terrible. Like, my handwriting looks like a drunk five-year-old handwriting, if I'm honest. One particular possession film that I really want to talk about, it's called The Devil's Candy, and it's finally available on Amazon Prime. I've been waiting years to see this film.
We are his pawns. We are his demons on Earth. He uses us to carry out his unspeakable deeds. We satiate his hunger.
Your latest work is wonderfully disturbing.
Oh my God.
I didn't mean to do this.
To sacrifice.
He will slither into your soul.
When it first came out, couldn't get on DVD for a reasonable price. One of my family members bought me it on DVD for like Christmas on my birthday. Couldn't play it because it's a German region one, so I couldn't play it. And I was like, God, damn it!
And finally
I
saw it
came up in Prime the other day. I'm like, yes, I can watch it for free. Watched it. I was like, I actually quite enjoyed this.
Good film. I think we should just mention, by the way, like we just obviously covered The Exorcist, and sadly this week, William Friedkin, the director of The Exorcist, passed away. What a time to pick a podcast about possession in the week an incredible director passed away.
When it comes to like horror films, because of like the fantastic films that came out in like the 70s, 80s and 90s, like the directors from that era,
yeah,
that have kind of like released such big hitters for our community. that they're starting to like drop like flies now, and it's just kind of like, no, yeah, no, you need to stay alive and make more bangers.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, isn't it? It just what it is. You know, we were watching, well, I'm 47, so I was watching these films when they came out in the 80s. And, you know, it doesn't matter how old you are, because when I go to horror cons, you've got like 16-year-olds coming up dressed in things from the 80s horror. It's still that big, or 70s as well. Still a big, big scene. But yeah, obviously, these guys were probably in the 30s and the 80s, so, you know, we're getting to the point where they start dropping off. Wes Craven, George Romero, really sadly, have left us. Toby Hooper. We're going to go for that period now where, you know, that's going to happen.
I'm dreading to think who's going to be the next one.
I don't even want to start picking people out, you know.
No, just in case we have like weird prediction thing. There's like, nope, not doing that.
Yeah, you know, you think like John Carpenter's like older and stuff, like my favourite director of all time, to be fair. He's older, Clive Barker's old and he's not well. So, you know, these people are going to drop off over the next few years, you'd imagine anyway. But like, it's just sad, you know. But they give us so much amazing art. That's what you need to remember.
On a more uplifting uplifting moment, going away from death and our favourite directors, what films have you got in your notes?
So I guess it really was. I was going through a list of films, and this, like, obviously Possession, you think exorcism films. So we go Exorcist, which is incredible, obviously. Then before I say the next film, you go through, like, all the other films you've seen, it's been a handful of just okay ones, I guess. Like, I went to see, I don't know if I mentioned it earlier, but I went to see Pray for the Devil at the cinema, and it tried to do a twist on it, like, it didn't really work. And I don't think there's ever been, besides the film I'm going to mention next, there's ever been an exorcism film that gripped me and I think is brilliant. So that film I'm talking about is actually directed by William Peter Blatty, who wrote The Exorcist. It's The Exorcist 3. We're not going to talk about The Exorcist 2, because I'm still hating over that film. It's such a bad film.
Oh.
But Exorcist 3 is fantastic, right? It's the story of the book Legion, and it's so well directed. Certainly got Brad Dourif, obviously, from Chucky, a great actor. You got like the sort of link to the original Exorcist film, which is so great. It's so well done. And, you know, there's so many good stories behind this. I remember reading that William Peter Blatty wrote the book Legion. He then wrote the script, and then we were looking at directors. So originally, John Carpenter was attached to that film. He went and met William Peter Blatty to turn it down. He said, like, because I just knew this guy wanted to direct his own film. This guy is so much more into it than me. And obviously he made Exorcist 3, which is fantastic. It's such a good film. It's so dark, and there's no, like, I had to do an exorcism in it because it's an exorcist film. There's not really an exorcism in the book, but, you know, it was such a good film.
The first time I saw it was at one of your screenings.
That's right, we did it at Crawford, and it was like, as you know, we tried to do sort of light-hearted horror then dark horror, light-hearted dark horror, to mix it all up. We don't want it to just be like, you know, just coming out miserable. But the Exorcist 3 is one of the like darkest films. I remember, like, when I was a kid, you know, I lived in Liverpool, we lived in a house, I had four sisters and stuff, and I had a VHS player in my bedroom, tiny bedroom, and a, you know, a small CRT TV. And I'd get films out, and one of the films I was watching in my bedroom on my own was The Exorcist 3. It absolutely is the biggest jump scare I've ever had in my life. Now, everyone knows about this jump scare now, so it doesn't work the same way it did at a particular time. I nearly fell off my bed. You know, I was lying on my single bed and this jump scare happens with the shears, and I jumped so high.
To be fair, I'm not surprised that bit made you jump off your bed.
It was when we did it at MK Horror. I was like, will this still have the same effect now when we were at the Crawford watching it? Obviously, Chris from American Horror, his part of Laura was there. And I thought, if it's going to get anyone, it's going to get her, because she's not a massive horror fan and she'll jump and stuff. And I watched the... I stood behind her with a camera ready. And she just went, oh! Like, oh, god damn it, I wanted more of a reaction. Like, yeah, it still is one of the biggest jump scares of all time. And you go on different horror forums and stuff, you ask anyone, like... age, and they go, yeah, The Exorcist 3, that scene. It was just so well built up, it was so quiet, nothing's happening, not that it's like the big music, the big monster thing, not monster, but like the big demonic thing coming out. It was just like, whoa.
Yeah, it was because it's just such a quiet moment, you kind of think, oh, what's going to happen now? And then something happens out of the blue and you're like, shitting hell.
Exactly that. I guess back then, I'm trying to explain this in a way that's like, that's been completely copied over time. Like, quiet moments in a film when suddenly there's like a big bang.
Yeah, James Wan has definitely adopted that.
It doesn't work so much as now, because I think that actual jump scare, which is one of the most famous jump scares of all time, has actually created an issue where everyone does this now. So... when you're watching a film and it pans around slow, you just sat there waiting for it, aren't you? You're just like, right, something's going to come out of the dark and jump and make me jump, you know? But with The Exorcist at the time, that was the first one, Exorcist 3, sorry, that was the first one that literally made me jump out of my bed. I absolutely fell on the floor, like, out of my bed, like, what the hell just happened? Because I wasn't expecting it. That jump scare, for me, started a series of jump scares where... So, I guess, have you seen Smile yet?
No, but I know what happens in it.
But the thing with Smile, right, it did really well in the box office, really well marketed. There's a couple of jump scares in it, but just so cheap. It was just like, big loud bangs, you know, big loud sounds that made you jump. But you're like, but they had no monster in it and stuff. It's like, just like, something quiet and they go... big loud sound, and then you jump because of that transition from quietness to a big loud sound that makes you jump out your skin. That's to me, it's like, it's been copied for me from The Exorcist 3. I mean, I'm sure there's listeners who are thinking about earlier films. For me, that was the first real big jump scare, was The Exorcist 3 in that moment. It was just so good.
I have to say, at least, like, a lot of people have like that memory of their first jump scare. Mine was probably from watching Species at my mum's house when I was quite young, and it's the bathroom scene in the nightclub toilet, and it's like, oh, for God's sake.
I can barely remember that film, actually. I remember watching it. God, who was the actress in that?
Oh, I can't remember, but she was a model, but that was her first like proper film, because she wanted to get out of modelling and go into movies.
Tasha Henstridge?
That one's familiar. Hold on.
Yeah, I think it's Natasha Henstridge. Because that has Michael Madsen in it as well.
You are correct.
Yeah, but I remember watching that once. It wasn't for me at the time. It was fun, but, like, you know, it wasn't like a lingering film I'm going to rewatch again.
Who are you? I am the one.
For me, that's two, you know, the best Exorcism films. I've watched so many, because there's been so many Exorcism films. There was one, which is annoying the hell out of me because I can't remember what it was called, but I think it's on Netflix right now, and it's I think it's Mexican, and it's, again, a possession film where people, like, a person goes back to their old sort of, like, they've lived in America, they go back to their Mexican family, and someone gets possessed, and it becomes an exorcism, and it's actually really, really good, and it's annoying the hell out of me, I can't remember what it's called. Meant to write it down my notes, but I forgot. But it's really good, and I will find it after here and tell you this film, because it's on Netflix and it's actually a decent, really decent, different exorcism film with a really good ending as well. It's just so far in between, because they say, like, you know, Pray for Devil comes out, Last Exorcism, Emily Rose. I just don't find. Oh my God, the Pope's Exorcist.
Yeah, fucking garbage.
Oh, so bad. So bad. It's like, it's just hard to do an exorcism film because there's no other way you can do it linear than going from, here's a priest. Priest gets called to speak to a parent who has a daughter who has problems and she thinks he's possessed. Then Reese goes around, she's not possessed, it's just mental. Then it goes, she is possessed, then it's the exorcism. And it's just not a genre where you can really deviate from that too much, because the end scene is always going to be the big exorcism scene, or the big payoff is going to be the exorcism, which is great, but like, it's the same film every time, and it's never going to be bettered by The Exorcist. It's just never going to be bettered.
No chance. I've found three Mexican exorcism films that might be the one that you were thinking of. The Day of the Lord, The Old Ways.
The Old Ways, that's it. The Old Ways.
There you go.
It's really good. It's, as far as exorcism film goes, it's not your generic... involves exorcism stuff, but it's not like your generic priest coming in. So I don't want to describe any more for that. Anyone listening who likes exorcism films, haven't seen The Old Ways, it's still on Netflix. I watched it a couple of months ago, and I was just like really surprised about how it was a bit different to other exorcism films, and I really enjoyed it. And there was like a bit of a storyline about how people got possessed. It just had more to it than pray for the devil, he's a nun whose mum was possessed and now she's a nun, and then we go on to another point where she's now involved. It's like she was the first female nun to be able to do exorcism. It's like, I get what you're trying to do, but it's just not very good. It's just very, 2.5, 3 out of 5 films, and that's what you mostly get from like even a decent exorcism films these days. The best ones are always like, 3 out of 5. I enjoyed it. You're never gonna get like Exorcist 5 out of 5. Exorcist 3, 5 out of 5. You're just not gonna get them films anymore, because storyline can't really be deviated too much. It's always the same thing.
When it comes to The Exorcist, I need to ask you, because I know how you feel about like reboots and remakes the same way I do. How would you feel about The Exorcist Believer?
Well, I will go and watch it. I'm sort of excited that they're trying to do another Exorcist. I really like the TV show. It wasn't perfect, but I really enjoyed it. I thought the TV show was good. But my big doubts on this is like... And I don't like to like put things down too much, even though I've done that a couple of times today, is that it's David Gordon Green who's doing it. Now, he did Halloween Trilogy in 2018 onwards. Halloween 2018 was great fun. It was a really good horror mod. But Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends, yes, that's the right order. They were terrible. They were really bad films. So I have doubts about putting that in the hands of him. I mean, we're going to talk in a minute about another possession film, which I can tell you that it's been handed through different directors, and probably the only sort of series of films that there's not one bad one.
Join us. Join us.
The Evil Dead, right? So obviously possession involves with the deadites, taking over the bodies of the human characters. And why it's not exorcism, it's still possession. And there's literally not a bad thing but that series that I've produced. Start with Evil Dead, brilliant, synonymously famous with like the Video Nasty era and stuff, and just such a wonderful film. Evil Dead 2, almost it is a remake of the first film, with a lot more comedy. And how Bruce Campbell, he should have got an Oscar for his acting in that film. He's so good, isn't it?
Yeah, the fact that he did his own stunts, and like a lot of it was kind of like smashing things over himself.
In the 80s as well, they had little in terms of the technology we got now to make that film. You watch it, it's brilliant, isn't it? And you got Army of Darkness, which is just stunningly funny. I remember watching Army of Darkness when I was a kid and didn't like it because it was a comedy rather than a horror film. Watching it recently, absolutely adored it. You got the main three films. Then you got the remake of Evil Dead, which is done by, Fede Alves. I've got his name wrong there, I'm sure. He did a great job. It was amazing for a remake. It's one of the few good remakes that were done. Then you've got Ash vs. Evil Dead, the TV show, which was incredible. Absolutely hilarious. It went more to the comedy side, but it was just brilliant. And then obviously you've got Evil Dead Rise by Lee Cronin, which was fantastic too. You know, it's probably the only series I could point out and go, there's nothing bad in that. It's all really good.
I definitely enjoyed the Evil Dead Rise. I actually went to the cinema and watched it with my wife, and it was fantastic. I loved it, and I like where they were going with it, and I like the fact that it wasn't like a remake or reboot. It was a continuation of what the foundations that were already laid out.
Yeah, obviously you talk about the three different Necronomicons, which is obviously links back to, I think it's Army of Darkness, so we know there's three different Necronomicons. It was done so well. It was, you know, it was like, let's take Evil Dead out of a cabin. Oh no, obviously out of, you know, medieval times, because that was like a really good twist back to how End of the Other Two happened, but like, we can't just do Cabin in the Wood films, let's do a high rise, and it worked really well. It was fun.
Yeah, truly amazing.
I guess if I had any complaint on Evil Dead Rise, it would be that, like, there was some good gore scenes, and there was a lot of blood, and I mean a shit ton of blood, right? It was just silly.
I just think how many gallons they went through of blood.
But then that's always been Evil Dead thing, right? You know, you think about Evil Dead 2 or Come on the Wall and stuff. But
oh yeah,
I would have liked more gore gags, you know. Like, there's obviously the cheese grater scene, which was good, and everyone was going crazy about that.
That was good.
But at the same time, you're thinking, that's one of the few good gore gags you've got. It could have done with some more of that, to me, to make it, like, not great, but brilliant. You know, it could have been absolutely stunning.
I have to say, I can't remember who I'm quoting with this one. I listened to it on the Evolution of Horror podcast, and I recommend listening to it because it's fantastic. It's just really funny.
Mike Wanter is great.
Yeah, I love him. I love his guests as well. And they talked about Hellraiser 2022, and one of his guests said, this Hellraiser, best way I can describe it is literally the missionary position. It's just so vanilla and so bland. It's like there's no sexual nature towards it. It's all just pain. There's nothing like erotic that's kind of like pushing it forward.
This is what the original Hellraiser. Now we need to stop talking about Hellraiser because we're talking about position. We do get sidetracked when we get excited about films.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But obviously, we're going to be doing a Hellraiser series, so.
Oh, be ready to suffer with me, dear.
Yeah, your suffering will be legendary, even in hell. Honestly, there's so few good Hellraiser films. To me personally, obviously, you know, it's my favourite horror film of all time. Hellraiser 1 and 2 are great. But again, I'm digressing. I'm getting pulled away. Don't make me talk about Hellraiser now. We'll talk about that on the next podcast. So let's go back to possession horror films. You've got so many. It's like, which are just very, very vanilla. As you said, you described some films as vanilla, like Hellraiser 2022 is very vanilla. But there is one that I saw, which I love, and I think we can call possession. Have you ever seen The Wailing?
I've got it on DVD. I keep meaning to sit down and watch it.
It's a long...
Whenever I get in the mood to watch it, it's a long film.
It's 2.5 hours
long,
but honestly, it's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. It's up there in my top possession films. I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to go into it. It's directed by, what's his name? He wrote and directed it. Nahon Jin, I think his name is. But honestly, that film is so good. It's so good. It's just well shot, it's well written, and it just, the sort of exorcism, not position, you know, exorcism, but the whole thing, honestly, I was just gripped to the screen when I watched this film. So yeah, if you haven't watched it, definitely watch that film. And don't think, you know, 2.5 hours is a long time for a horror film, right? And I know you have complained to me before about like how Terrifier 2 just pissed me off, because two and a half hours of this slasher film was just too much. But in The Wailing, there's so much storyline going on. It didn't feel long. I was just gripped all the way. It's a really, really, really good film.
Okay, I'll make time to watch it at some point. I'll still need to watch Scream 6. I'll watch The Wailing at some point as well.
Scream 6 is fine. It's probably the best Scream since, I don't know, Scream 1 maybe, because I didn't like any of it, I don't think. I can't remember Scream 2. Scream 4 was terrible. Scream 3, I can't remember. Scream 5 actually was, like, the other guys didn't like that. Chris and Paul didn't like that. But I didn't mind it. I think that was because I'd been put off by the twist because someone had seen something on Twitter, unfortunately, before it got over here. Scream 6, it was a bit more fun, but it's not a touch on The Wailing. The Wailing is a fantastic film.
I would like to talk about Red Mist. It came out in 2008. So it's not really your typical possession movie. It's literally about a guy goes out, some people that he knows through work take the piss out of him, dare him to essentially chug a pint, but he has an epileptic fit and hits his head, winds up in hospital, and starts getting vengeance against the people that caused him to end up in hospital in a comatose state. And he can possess them and do some really horrible things.
Okay, no, I don't think actually I've seen that one, though.
That's an odd. I used to have it on DVD. I don't know if I still do or not.
I will put it on my list to check
it
out.
It's a film of its time, but it was interesting because it's literally like the bad guy kind of had a point as to why he would go after these people. And like, well, yeah, you caused me to go in this state. You took the piss out of me. Why am I the only one that has to suffer? Kind of thing. So it's kind of like you kind of root for him, but at the same time you're like, wow, he's doing some horrid things.
Okay, I'll put it on my list to watch. There's another one on my list which is definitely possession based because of how the film plays out, and I'm pretty sure you've seen this, but Prince of Darkness by John Carpenter.
Yes, that was one of my first horror films I ever watched.
Oh, nice. But like, it's such a great film. I love that film so much. I mean, watching it back now, not problematic is not the right term, but it's very 80s with like a guy being very sort of like, what's the word? When he's like hitting on the girl, being a bit over the top, you know? But in that film, obviously, you've got like Alice Cooper. All the people outside are possessed.
I always forget that Alice Cooper is in the film.
Yeah, so like they're sort of possessed, I guess. They're like coming to, because the devil's coming and stuff. But that's just a wonderful film. Obviously, probably my favourite director is John Carpenter. Just because of the amount of great work he's done. It'd be him, Wes Craven, and obviously then Clive Barker because of Hellraiser. But there's just so many films in this genre where you say in possession, which they might not be exorcism films, but people do get possessing. You could almost say, I guess, The Shining, even though it's more a mental health thing, but like mental health, maybe like he's fallen apart, but he does get like sort of possessed by the ghosts of the Outlook Hotel. But just so many links. You got The Conjuring, The Conjuring 2, The Conjuring, The Devil and Maybe Do. I can't remember if the favorite one was called. It was terrible. But there's so many of them. But like, you can link the possession.
I've literally got like double digits worth of films here. So if you want, I can go through my list of like mentions and things. Cause
okay, yeah, cool. Go for it.
Right, let's go for the firing round.
I'm not going to judge you.
Okay. But so, movies that I've watched: The Exorcist, Exorcist 3, Evil Dead, all of them, Exorcism of Emily Rose, Devil Inside.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
Devil's Candy, Chef's Kiss. I love Devil's Candy. And I'll admit, if people like rock and metal music videos, this is definitely for you because it's got that kind of style to it. Red Mist from 2008, films I would like to watch: Black Coat's Daughter.
I've seen that, it's great. I forgot about that film, actually.
A House on Willow Street.
Not seen that one yet.
The Taken of Deborah Logan. The Dark and the Wicked. And Honourable Mentions. Veronica from 2017. The Prodigy, not the band.
I had The Prodigy's up there, yeah. I had that, yeah, obviously the film. I had that up there.
Jezebel and, I want to say this right, but I'm probably not, Maligno from 2016.
The Prodigy, I forgot about that one, actually, because, like, isn't that the one that has a really good scene which is actually completely stolen from another film, which I can't for the life of me remember, where he runs up the hallway and then just jumped up and it becomes really big. Oh, I'm pretty sure that's a film. I might have got that wrong, though, so you're going to be laughing at me later. But, yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm going to have to look into this now.
Yeah. But, like, there's just one really... It's a really well-shot scene where you've got the kid running toward... Like, down, like, a hallway, you know, top of the stairs hallway, and he jumps towards the pit, you know, the camera point of view, and just gets really big. It's like, wow, that was an amazing shot. And then I obviously go on, like, you know, the internet and something, just like, I can't remember what film was. It just completely ripped off this shot, which is, you know, because they homage this shot rather than ripped it off, I guess. But it is just such a good moment.
I mean, that was just the films I could be bothered to write down. If I wrote them all down, I would have ran out of space.
You could literally write down, like, 100 films. There's a Bye Bye Man, there's Possession, there's Amityville, which is Amityville Horror, which involves sort of being possessed. There's Annabelle, there's so many Burnt Offerings. You know, you could sit there and just reel off film after film that involves possession. But I'll go back to what I originally said.
There's very few that are good.
But the few that are good are some of the greatest horror films of all time, and they've been copied, but it's very rarely that the quality has been replicated. I mean, let's say Exorcist 1, incredible, written by William Peter Blatty. Exorcist 3, written and directed by William Peter Blatty. William Friedkin did Exorcist 1 as a director, and they're just so good. I'm sure people who listen to your podcast will go, well, that wasn't the first one, but the original for me was The Exorcist. And it's just the absolute best. To me, it's one of the few films that are a 5 out or 10 out of 10. You can count the number of films on probably two fingers that I would give 10 out of 10 to. That would be The Exorcist and Jaws. I mean, my favourite film is Hellraiser, but to me, Jaws and The Exorcist are two of the greatest horror films of all time. They're not just good horror films, but just almost perfect films in the way they're done.
Both so quotable as well.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah. They're both so quotable. I'm not going to quote The Exorcist on here because, you know, you might have young listeners.
The power of Christ compels you!
Not really. I mean, from the analytics, it doesn't look like they're that young. But it's kind of like, you know what, we see this swear words all the time, like F-bombs and all that, so go for it, I don't mind.
Yeah, well, obviously you've got The Exorcist has got so many great lines. When it does kick off, the film kicks off so well. I mean, there's so much about The Exorcist, which is like, when you watch it, he starts off obviously in Iraq. Foreign Marin's there. He sees the Pazuzu statue and does a really good famous sort of pose in front of it. And he shoots to Reagan and the mum and Captain Hardy all comes. And this all comes in and it's really good and it's really well paced. And when it kicks off, it really kicks off. It just relentless when it kicks off. But then it's like the point where Foreign Marin turns up, who you've literally seen in the opening. And now I probably missed something here, and probably people listening going, oh, but you don't get this bit, because I've read the book. Oh, we'll go back to the book in a minute. But like, Marin turns up and Pazuzu's like, oh, it's Marin, you know, he knows this person because he seems to. And it's like, there's no link between why Father Marin would have ended up going to do this exorcism and this demon would have known who Marin is besides. See, but you know what? It doesn't matter because it's so fucking good. It's such a good film. If anyone listens to Audible, I really, really recommend listening to, I think it's a 50th anniversary Audible version, and it was narrated by William Peter Blatty, and he does this so well. Like, honestly, when he does the voice of the demon, it's incredibly so well done. He does this so well, and what's great about that is, like, you know when he wrote that story, that was a voice in his head, and you get to hear how he wanted that demon to sound, and it is quite frightening. You know, there's a very few and far between books that actually frighten me. The Exorcist World War One did, in a good way, and that's when I'm like 45 or something. And then there's Secret Crickley Hall by James Herbert, which is great. A really good ghost story, but very, you know, I love horror. Book wise, it doesn't scare me so much, I just enjoy it. We had two books that have really, really hit me with Crickley Hall, which actually turned to a BBC series, which wasn't great, but you know, it was fine. But the book's amazing, and also listen to William Peter Blatty, the original author of The Exorcist, reading out how he wanted his character to sound was just incredible.
Bet that sounded beautiful.
Oh, it was so good. It was so good.
So we know what your like favourite possession films are, but what ones would you kind of go, yeah, maybe I'd watch it again at some point?
God, it's a hard one because I go back to like, I've watched so many of them. They've all been a bit, meh, that's fine. I enjoyed that, but it, you know.
It's very difficult to do like possession movies without it being compared to like The Exorcist and Evil Dead and, you know, sometimes, but it's nice to see that people are trying, though.
Yeah, it's fine to try, but it's almost like you try and come up with a different twist on it, because everything's very formulaic for me. We've like the last Exorcism with like Emily Rose and stuff, films that people like, but I'm just thinking, that's meh, it's fine, I didn't hate it, but it was just like, yeah, it was Exorcism by numbers. I mean, I'm sure, again, as we talk about this on every podcast we do, is that there'll probably be a film tomorrow and I'll wake up and go, oh God, I forgot I really liked that one. But like, most of them are just so vanilla. So, it starts off, get the Exorcism films. I mean, I'm sure there's other possession films we haven't covered, actually, but the two for me are Evil Dead and The Exorcist. But, yeah, you start off with a story. Someone somehow has played with a Ouija board, like obviously Ouija and stuff, then films. It's just generic. It's like, start off, they have the incident where they invoke the demon, and you have the next like 45 minutes of them getting slowly possessed or in whatever way, and like people are trying, oh, what's going on here, you know? And it's every film. And then eventually you have the last half hour, which is all about the exorcism and the possession and getting rid of the demon. And it's just too formulaic. Now you can say that for slashes, but slashes, you can invent a new character. You can have a Freddy Krueger, you can have a ghost face, you can have a Jason Voorhees. You've got options to make this different. You can make the kills different for people, you know, like, which is quite often a thing. Like, what films are well known for in the slasher genre is like, oh my, you know, Friday the 13th Part 3 had the three sleeping bag. I think I've got the right one. Apologies if I'm wrong. Where he picked up sleeping bag and smashes the death against a tree, which is great, you know, like, different sort of kills. But with an exorcism, you only got one thing that's going to happen. It's going to start, get possessed, through the point of like no one believes this, and then go, oh, really, Nexus. And that's why it makes it so hard to do, because it's just too formulaic. I mean, I'd love to see someone do something the other way around, but I just don't think it's a genre that can ever be better from the Exorcist. And well, obviously the Exorcist Fear is amazing too, but you know, we're gonna go back to them saying, what do you do different? The Exorcist 3 definitely did the difference, but I don't think anyone's ever gonna touch them films.
Say, I mean, the Black Coat's Daughter, that is done a bit differently because the girl actually doesn't want the demon to leave, because it's literally like the only thing, only like constant in her life.
Yeah, that's true.
And the fact that she's like, I don't want this thing to leave me, like the fact she's actively trying to get the demon back, it kind of like, it's mm-hmm. quite sad, but at the same time, it's kind of like it makes it different that really this very lonely person really just wants a someone there to mm-hmm. just be there with her. But I do recommend that people try and watch that one, because I've heard that it's absolutely fantastic, and it does kind of turn it a little bit.
That's a good shout. The other one, I guess it's Possession in a way, but it's just a fun film. Have you seen Freaky? It's Vince Vaughn, and it's a story...
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that's more just, like, body swap than Possession.
Swap, yeah, I guess possessed each other's bodies. That was great fun. Yeah, it's probably body swap. More like if you're talking about comedy, you're talking about, it's like a horror version of the film Big with Tom Hanks. So, yeah, I was going through when I was like, we knew we were going to do this podcast. And I was just looking and I was thinking, you know, there's not many great, especially when you talk Possession, you think about exorcism films. And there's just not many great ones there at all.
I would say, look up, I think it's either on Prime or Netflix, I can't remember which one, The Dark and the Wicked. It's a recent film, quite a heavy film apparently, so watch on a good day. And it's, a lot of people say it's kind of like, it's almost like a metaphor for grief or...
Okay.
But there's no like, oh, this person has done something to invite this monster to like possess them. This is literally like, this is something that's taken over. It's essentially two grown-up siblings go to look after like dying dad because their mother is having trouble with it.
Okay, yeah.
And the mother says, like, there's something in him that we can't get rid of. And then some hallucinations happen and like some really bad stuff happens in it. And it's kind of like, it doesn't shy away from the horror of the situation of like the grown kids kind of going, well, we're going to lose our dad at some point. We're watching him waste away. They think their mum is essentially starting to go a bit balmy because of what's going on. But it's when they start to like notice things as well that they're kind of like something else going on.
Mm-hmm. Again, I have heard of the film actually, but I haven't seen that one yet, so I should put that, just type it onto my list now.
I love doing that. I keep adding more and more things to guest lists, and it's kind of like, it will never end, will it?
Yeah, it's what's always funny about your list, and like, what terrible film on Amazon Prime is Faith going to mention today? It's always like, after seeing this on Amazon Prime, it's like, Goldfish Massacre or something. It's like, okay, I'll watch the first 5 minutes, see how it goes.
Oh god, yeah, some of the films on there, you do kind of need it to turn into a bit of a drinking game.
Yeah, almost, yeah, exactly.
But... Oh no. But I try to look at a lot of films and sort of think, right, they made an effort with it. There's some really good things in this film. As a whole, wouldn't rate it that highly, but I like certain aspects of it, and some of it did work. Like, I watched a film called Sea Beast a couple of weeks ago. God awful.
I mean, there we go. Like, I just said Goldfish Massacre and you come up with Sea Beast.
Yeah, Sea Beast, not a great film, but it's got some fun bits in it. It's got some interesting aspects to it. But my God, some of the actors and actresses need a good slap, because it's kind of like, for God's sake.
Like my friend Stu, he keeps trying to get me to watch Sharknado films. So one day, when I was ill, I think it was when I had COVID, I was lying on the sofa, I put Amazon Prime News, Sharknado 5, right? So I watched the first half hour of Sharknado 1 when it came out with Helen. And like, nope, we were both like, no, this is terrible. I got the premise of it, you know, what was driving that film being made. But I'm like, I can't be arsed watching this, right? So I started watching Sharknado 5 and I just like, it's one of the worst things I've ever seen. But what is absolutely shocking is like, and it's amazing, by the way, I mean this in a good way, is that like this sort of fun, terrible but fun sort of series of films has actually made, I think there's 5 of them now, I don't know, maybe there's more, I don't know, I avoid them. But it's made £4.5 billion. It's like, what? You've got like really good horror coming out. I mean, you know, Smile, which I thought was just a decent film rather than a great film. I think it got really overrated. But I did enjoy it again. Definitely a 3 out of 5. enjoyed it, liked what they did, loved the marketing for the film. It made $180 million, which was great because it only cost $17 million. But this film, these films cost like 10 quid, and they made £4.5 billion. It's just nuts.
Okay, apparently, oh yeah, there are 6 Sharknado movies and 3 spin-off movies.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch any of them. I'll tell you now. It's just not for me. I don't mind fun, like, you know, giant crocodile versus mega shark or whatever. But I just get bored really quick. It doesn't work for me, the sort of comedy aspect of it. And I've got no problem with people who it does work for, because, you know, it's just fun.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen them, but I've been in the like mood for stuff like that. If I'm to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. God, yeah. Well, I've got to, yeah, the mood for that is I've got to be absolutely smashed up my face when I put that on. I want to be so drunk I can't see the screen. There's like 3 sharks coming out of it, like the TV's gone 3D or something.
God, yeah. I can imagine both of us trying to sit there and watch it. Like, we can get through this. Just both of us just like sweating and bleary eyed from alcohol. We're just there like, we can finish it.
Well, you know what? You're going to be wishing you were watching Sharknado by the time you hit, like, Hellraiser Judgment. Honestly, you're going to be praying for Sharknado.
Oh, even better. We'll have to do I need to... If you're willing to do the sacrifice, or I can rope someone else into doing this one, the Puppet Master franchise. Sweet Jesus.
I love Puppet Master. Yeah. The Puppet Master films are great. They're just silly, like, and it's very like Nazi oriented. But no, I like the Puppet Master films. They're always like, I can't remember every single one. The new one I found fun. It's silly but fun. I'm all over that, like, sort of like these little characters, like critters type, you know, little monsters. I'm all over that. You should rope someone else to do Puppet Master, because I've always got to do like 11 films with Hellraiser. I think it's 11, and there's only like probably, well, there's 2 brilliant ones, and then there's probably 2 acceptable ones, and the rest are terrible. So we're gonna have to deal with that. It's gonna be great.
That'll be fantastic. But I'm gonna need to, oh god, I'm gonna need a breather between the films.
Oh yeah, we're not gonna do it all in one sitting. Once a night, one a night maybe. Definitely, there's some of them films I can't watch back to back. Jesus Christ, they're so bad. I met Heather Langenkamp at Sheffield Horror Con a couple of years back, and we were sitting chatting, and she was like, she bought the Hellraiser tattoo on top of Hellraiser. She's like, yeah, I'm in the new one, which is Hellraiser Judgment, with Gary Tunnicliffe actually directed. And he's actually the original makeup artist for Hellraiser, so you've got hope that there's someone here that's got Hellraiser knowledge. But then you remember that the only reason they're pumping out Hellraiser films, the Weinsteins name, that's obviously very solid now, was to keep all the license. So they'd give someone 100 grand every 2 years and make a film. So she said, like, Heather was like, yeah, I'm going to, like, after this con, I'm going over to shoot a scene for Hellraiser. And I'm like, oh my god, you're in Hellraiser film. I love Hellraiser films. She's like, yeah, I've read the script. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's bad. And in fact, to the point where I think even her scene, she's meant to just play some crazy, she got paid for it, obviously, but crazy old woman running out to tell the kids off, got cut and put on the, like, you know, film editing floor, whatever you want to call it. But like, yeah, I think she was quite pleased about that, because it was such a terrible film.
I bet she was just there like, yeah, I've got bills to pay.
Yeah, but of course that's what most actors do, you know. Not all of them, like Doug Bradley makes most of his money by doing cons, but even when he did obviously Hellraiser, then he did Nightbreed, smaller part of Nightbreed, and then I just remember watching the film The Cottage, which had, of all people, Jennifer Ellison, you know, of Zoo, Lad Mag fame. It's actually quite a fun film. Like, Bradley's in it for like all of 10 seconds as he's walking past with his dog, you know. It's like, wow, talk about a cameo.
That's such a random thing. It's kind of like trying to spot random cameos in films. It's like, why are you there?
So I guess, you know, we go back to like what the conversation was today. It is possession horror. And now tomorrow I'm going to wake up and think about other possession horror I do actually remember liking. But to me, the two best are obviously The Evil Dead, The Night, Possession, plus obviously the absolute daddy of them all, which is The Exorcist. And there's barely been a good exorcism film since that, so except The Exorcist 3, of course, which you mentioned earlier.
So where can our lovely listeners find you?
Me and my friends run the NK Horror. We do a film every month for the Crawford Arms. Our next film, waiting for the date to be confirmed, is the 26th of August, and it's going to be Critters. We like to do a mixture of, you know, fun horror plus dark horror. So we've got basically our next six films lined up, and we'll be releasing that on our Instagram page and Facebook page and Twitter page soon. You can find us. Our newsletter is at mphorrorclub.com. Sign up for that. So yes, and come to the Crawford Arms, the best pub in Milton Keynes, and watch horror films and talk about horror films afterwards. We love it. It's what we're there for. It's why we started it. We want to meet like-minded horror fans in the same way, you know. This is why I'm doing this podcast, because I met you with them, so fantastic.
Yes, it was very delightful when I first met you, because I was like, oh God, how am I going to approach them? I was so nervous.
It was Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that was the one where we got there early, and, you know, we drunk a bit at a time. So when people were leaving, I said, we've got to talk to people this time. You got up and was like, oh, did you like it? And you talked, and then obviously messaged me on Instagram afterwards, so it was great. And we're all friends now. We've got so many friends from this group of people who go to watch NK Horror. It's amazing. But like some people I call my closest friends now, who I've known for a couple of years, like yourself, like Jamie, like Anthony, who are people you'll know. Obviously, friends I already had. It's just, you know, this is what we did it for. To meet people in Milton Keynes who like horror films.
Groovy.
A fantastic episode as always. If you enjoyed this week's episode, make sure to share it on your socials. And if you would like to help us, you can always rate and review our podcast wherever you hear it. You can also help out by joining our Patreon for £3 a month. For that, you get credited in each episode. There's also a bonus episode. You can recommend movies for us to watch. And you also get a personalised thank you message for being supportive to this podcast. You can do that by going to patreon.com/caffeinatedmonsters. And if you'd like to update your wardrobe, you can always go to our merch stores as well on Redbubble, redbubble.com/people/caffeinatedm/shop. If you would like to, we also have a Spreadshirt store as well. If you'd like to go to caffeinatedmonsters.myspreadshop.co.uk. You can always find us on Instagram, Facebook and the Slash Rub as well.